Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. Today we have a return guest, somebody who is a close friend of Top Advisor Marketing, Jen Goldman, who is a business transformation consultant and the owner of Jen Goldman Consulting. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here and I always love chatting with you.
I am totally ready to nerd out with you on this because this is something. So many of you who don't really know how podcasting works, we're always doing things to prep for the podcast. So when we go live, we have a little bit of background and backstory so that we sound a little bit more prepared and a little bit more organized. It's just the right thing to do. And Jen and I were just talking about the topic today and found out that we both have some shared experience. And the topic today is how to merge a CPA firm with a wealth management firm. Now, this is something that's happening a lot. There are a lot of CPA firms that really want to get into wealth management, and there are a lot of wealth management firms who want to start offering tax services. So, Jen, why don't you give us a little backstory on why you wanted to talk about this and what was kind of the catalyst for this communication today?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Basically, I had a firm reach out to me that is trying to blend the two businesses together and having an enormous amount of pain. And it brought back memories of when I joined a long time ago when I was actually an employee. I joined a tax firm to build out wealth management. And then as a consultant early on, I was brought into a firm, again, that was trying to blend tax and wealth. And I realized, wait a minute, there's something here. It's nice somebody reached out to me, but then I started Googling and looking for information and podcasts and God knows anything I could find, and realized there is not a lot of content out there. I mean, the AICPA puts out some guides, a few guides. Kitches put out a long podcast and discussion, but I would have thought with so many firms, over 50% are already, CPA firms are offering some sort of financial planning and retirement planning, right? That there would have been a lot more banter, a lot more things found by a Google search, and there's not. So what do you think I do? Reached out to you and said, maybe we should chat about it because we both, as you said, we both have experiences working in this situation with tax and wealth.
And I'm going to just launch right into my first question for you, which is, how do you bridge the philosophical business differences between how a CPA runs a firm and how a wealth management firm runs a firm? What have you done? Where's your brain at on this?
Well, the one thing I think is an underlying trait, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, is that CPA firms believe in process and they value their time because they actually time track. So the concept of following a process actually plays into being a wealth management firm. I mean, there is a natural way to work with a prospect to earn their business. There is a natural process and way to service them. And so the one underlying similar trait among the two is this love of having processes. It's also about having a more comprehensive engagement. Like I could say maybe 20 years ago, it was about just doing high volume tax return. Well, that's left now to H&R Block and others. A good CPA firm doesn't look to do high volume. They're looking to have a relationship with their clients. So that also is the same trait in wealth management. So instead, like you say about philosophical differences, I know I agree with you. There are so many. I think I go at it with what are the few things that they have absolutely in common and then build from there.
Okay, well, let's. I love processes. I love systems. I know that is one of your major fortes. How do you then find that common ground, have them both understand that there is that level of understanding and systemization, and then how do you start integrating those systems?
I was going to be flippant and say a lot of conversations, right? It kind of is. It's almost like taking an inventory of what do you each do? It's almost like interviewing yourselves. What do you do when you meet a potential client and comparing? Like, and then realizing, oh my gosh, there's some overlap in what we do. And then comparing, what do you do when you first get them as a client? So it's almost, and again, I'm biased. I go from a process standpoint, right? But it's like asking each other. So put executives from both businesses in the room, or those that are in the know, and start walking through your general way of working with the clients, your general way of working with prospects, your general way of marketing. I think that's really important. You know, maybe you market totally differently. I think talking matters, and I think you pick each area of the business as a topic, and maybe it's 1 hour per meeting because that's all you can handle because it's information overload, right? So maybe one meeting is about marketing and one meeting is about what do you do with prospects and one meeting is what do you do with clients. I think that's where you start. And maybe whiteboarding, sure. Mm-hmm. Maybe documenting, of course. Having somebody in the room type it all up because it's information overload, but that's where I would start. I don't know. What would you say?
Well, I can't get past. So here's where my hurdles happened. So this was probably 3 or 4 years ago. I was working with an advisor up in Saginaw, Michigan, which isn't far from where I am. And there was a large accounting firm, a large regional accounting firm that wanted to absorb him because they were going to be his succession plan. And the two things that they had the biggest issues with were the CPAs on how partnerships worked. Right. So how the equity share happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then the billable hour, since my advisor charged a fee, right, which was not based on time. It was based on a percentage of assets, right? An assets under management fee. They could not wrap their brain around how, one, he came up with the number, which, of course, CPAs have, you know, tried to destroy that philosophy for years. But right. The other thing was, is they couldn't figure out why he would be making more money than the partners in the wealth in the CPA firm. So help me with that. What do you think about that? Because those were huge hurdles for us.
Compensation.
Yeah.
That's a good one. You know, I how would you do that? I think here's what I did in the past.
Okay.
And I still do this sometimes, even just with wealth firms that don't even have tax. I would show the other party. So let's say the wealth manager advisor is showing the CPA, okay, or the tax person, everything that it takes to do financial planning. So almost put them through the ropes as if they were a potential client. Show them what you would deliver. Show them what you would prepare behind the scenes. Talk about your, you know, decision-making process and your resources. I think showing, and I'm a visual-based person, is believing. And I think an accountant, a CPA, would then truly understand why the wealth advisor would make more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe that's me being an optimistic person, but I've found in most cases when I've done this, that actually opens their eyes. I mean, there's follow-up questions and discussions, and then there's, of course, crazy number crunching.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about comp is, what happens when that accountant refers the business to the wealth advisor?
Yes.
Right? Do they get compensated? So at one firm, we structured a compensation that went back to the tax advisor. It was a one time, but this is a while ago. Now it might need to be ongoing. I'm not quite sure. I'm sure there's different ways you could do it. But there was a thank you referral fee paid back. That was compliant.
Were they licensed?
I think the tax advisor did get their Series 65 at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good question. And, I don't know the compliance rules as of today, but I do believe that compensation can be had if it's clear and transparent and tied to the right metric, which is giving the referral, not ongoing service. Because that a tax advisor is not going to be pulled into the wealth.
Right. And then their name would actually even be on the paperwork in the account. And that could end up being somewhat confusing. Or from a marketing perspective, it could be very powerful just because then it looks like you have a unified approach. Now, one of the things that to solve, there's obviously lots of different ways to solve the problem. The CPA could become licensed, right? Which would be fantastic.
Yes.
That way, then the revenue share is no issue. Well, less of an issue. That can all be done at the BD level or the RIA level with whatever splits.
Right.
But one of the things, and Jen, you just, for some reason, this just popped into my head, and gosh, I wish I would have thought about this 4 years ago, was this to go fee only or the retainer model. So Adam, Alan Moore, who I just interviewed a little while ago, that's one of the things that he talked about on the podcast. That would solve a lot of these weird business format or the business structure differences. If you went to a retainer model, that would really allow the greases to be skids to be greased. What is the analogy there?
No,
okay, I got nothing.
I don't know either.
Whatever.
Right.
It would be easier.
What? That's a really good point. The two firms that I worked with at Tax and Wealth, they were on retainer.
Wow.
And you know what? They were actually more comfortable with retainer than a traditional wealth firm because accountants time track. Okay. The concept behind a fixed retainer is that you have to value your time properly and not undervalue it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have to know how much time it takes to do something so you make sure you're profitable. Well, accountants have an acute awareness of that, where I would say somebody growing up in the wealth industry from the beginning probably never time tracked, would hate it, and usually does not value their time properly.
Oh gosh. When, as a business consultant, one of the first things I would do is to take P&L, and then I would go back through their contact management system and I would take their top client. So whoever their A++++ client was, and I would track how much money that they generated from the client. So the revenue. And then I would look at how many times that A++++ client contacted the firm, and I would show them almost, I'd say, the Pareto rule, right? 80% of the time that they were losing money on that client because they were so needy and they provided them with way too much service, because the advisor, as you just said, does not track their time well. But so let's switch gears, because I think there's a lot of fun stuff that can happen here. So number one, if you are thinking about merging, that fee only or the retainer model is going to make that transition much, much more smoothly. And there, from a marketing perspective and a fiduciary perspective, that's really in line with the way that it seems the industry is moving. But let's talk about marketing, because advisors in general, they're wearing their marketing hats all the time. A CPA has to go down into the basement and dust off the hat that they wore 18 years ago when they opened their door that says marketing on it, dust the head and realize it doesn't fit anymore. So how do you help with that transition? Because structure and system and everything, let's just wave our magic wand and say that's in place. Now they have to make money. Help us with that. What do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, that you shouldn't have two separate brands. I just don't see that working. It doesn't look synergistic.
Yes.
So, you know, so often I meet a firm where there is Tax and Wealth and they have two separate websites, two separate URLs, two separate email addresses. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, so, you know, and of course the step before that is, you've got to discuss and determine what type of client you really want to take on. Like, are you really in this because you want to say to a new prospective client, I'm not going to just do your 1040. I'm going to do financial management, planning, and tax for you all as one package. So it's kind of like an all or nothing. Mm-hmm. All right. That's one thing. But then more importantly, I think everything's blended into one URL, one website, one social media presence. And taxes are one of the services offered. And as for wording, you and I would both agree. If you're not good at wordsmithing, you hire somebody outside to do it.
Absolutely.
Right? And sometimes, in this case, because it is a little bit, sometimes this is definitely a mental shift, it's probably a great idea in this case to actually hire somebody on the outside to blend the brands and the website, because they're that outside perspective that maybe the wealth and the tax advisor can't, they're kind of stuck in the weeds. And that outside person is kind of like the mediator.
Well, Jen, you and I were talking about that with what's going on with you, right? How nice it is even for you to be able to outsource having that objective third person take a look at what you're doing and what you're, and that's why Kirk and I have jobs, right? I mean, we are that objective third person. And as a consultant, which you are, it's really nice to be able to bring you in as that objective third person to take a look at, you know, all of those different things, because you're not coming in tainted like somebody else might. Now, when it comes to services offered and pitching your wealth management services to the accounting firm and the accounting firm services to the wealth management, what did you see work before? I mean, how difficult was it to cross market?
It was so easy that this was what makes me a little crazy that it's not done more. I mean, I was a part of a firm that was at $23 million AUM And it was a one advisor shop as part of a 45-person CPA firm. Okay. And not even in 9 months, with no tech when I started, no process, no nothing, we grew to 101 mil. Like it was like just picking fruit off the floor. Okay. The trick, and it's not a trick, it's common sense, is you have to sell to your internal audience, which is the accountants. And you have to sell to them to get their trust. And then the referrals just flow in. One, they have to know what to see on a tax return to know that somebody's qualified. Two, they have to know that if they connect that wealth advisor with their tax client, they're going to be taken care of in a very professional manner, just like they would have. And three, they need to know what is going to be provided to their to the tax client, you know? So I used to call it a pitch book, and I think some people cringe, but it is what it is. A sample of deliverables and things that will be done for that wealth client need to be shown to the tax advisor. They need to be talked through the process. When you do that consistently and they give you one referral and then another, and you follow your process and you do what you promised, the floodgates open. So if you do it right, it's not about growth. It's about slowing the growth down, in my opinion.
I have heard that CPAs in general are very averse to selling, but what you're talking about is just offering extra services. And I want all of our listeners to really plant that in their brain, because that is such a great way for you, even if you're not merging with a CPA firm, to pitch your services to an accounting firm in your area, because you're just part of the menu of services. Every accounting firm has a menu of services, right? Yep. Now, I worked with this old, I mean, when I'm saying old, this guy was like Methuselah old, out in California. He was a CPA that, so he was like 78 years old. Now, I know that's not Methuselah old, but he was pretty old. And he started being a financial advisor when he was 74. So he'd been in it 4 years when he got licensed. He became a $100 million firm within, I don't remember what it was, like 18 months. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he's always, you know, he was joking with me on the phone, why in the heck didn't I do this earlier?
Yeah.
But one of the things that he would teach all of his CPAs was one saying, and I don't remember if I have the schedule right, so you might have to help me with that. But he would say, if you see over $10,000 or as losses on their schedule C, is it C or D? Mm-hmm. Do you remember?
C is the business.
There you go.
Return. So, yep. They're a business owner. Yep.
Call me. So it was a very quick, just like you're talking about a pitch book. You see losses on the schedule. So call me. I'm the wealth manager. This is what I do. And he implemented that, and he brought in another $50 million the next tax season. See, Jen, I love that you wanted to bring this up, and I'm so happy that you wanted to talk about this, because there is so much synergy. It doesn't have to be an antagonistic relationship, which it seems to be in a lot of situations, where you can help a CPA firm just really become much more profitable. And, you know, when I was joking about going down to the basement and grabbing that marketing hat and dusting it off, CPAs really need a salesperson. They really need marketing. They need somebody who feels comfortable with public speaking. And that's what most advisors do. So, what else do you see with this as maybe not just opportunity, but barriers or philosophical differences? What else should we unpack here?
Yeah, I think you peel back the onion. I mean, you got it. At some point, you have to think about staffing, and you have to think about, like, on the, let's say you're merging two firms together, for example. Okay. At some point, you have to recalibrate some of the people that are on the tax side to learn the wealth side, and vice versa. You have to be fluent enough to give a good referral, but more importantly, to give good synergistic service. So the end client doesn't feel like there's hiccups or a kind of a communication gap between the two. So I think that you have to think about roles and responsibilities of people, and you have to reach out to your staff. Like, I know when I was at the one firm, we really reached out and realized that somebody was much more interested in wealth than tax. And we didn't want to lose them, right? So staffing is one thing you have to peel back on this one. I think another thing, and I don't want to harbor this, but I see too many tax and wealth firms that have totally separate systems and technology. So you're always, the problem with our industry, this kind of combined effect, is there is not one CRM that handles tax workflows and wealth management workflows properly. Okay, and there's not one CRM that integrates with the tax software. I'm praying for it for the last 12 years and I'm just done holding my breath. Right? But for the most part, you should have one document system. You should have one CRM with all the contacts for both kind of parts of the business. You know, there are pieces that you really should streamline. And this doesn't feel like fun work, I'm sure. It doesn't feel business development-ly or whatever, but it's necessary. And I think firms struggle with that growth. So you talk about the guy that goes to 100 million. Mm-hmm. He probably could have gone much more than that if he had very streamlined systems and processes in place and everything was really synergistic before he opened the floodgates. And so that's what I see with tax and wealth firms merging, is that they actually have to slow down their growth because they're not prepared. They didn't realize mm-hmm. what a great, wonderful, rough diamond they were sitting on top. Mm-hmm.
I love your frustration with the ability to have contact management systems or workflows communicate between different softwares. And yeah. Honestly, Jen, I know that you and I both, well, we'd be the richest people in the world if we could figure out how to just open source this or make it all work and talk together. Yeah. But one of the things that the firm did in California was they did have a separate client. They called it a client relationship manager. So this was where they logged the communication. So it didn't have workflows in it. So it was a very bare bones system. I mean, it was, I think it was Salesforce just for tracking. And then they had their separate systems, but everything, anytime a client called, whatever yeah. It was all logged in the same place. So that way when the accountant yep. is sitting with, so there are some solutions. It's just not a fully integrated solution.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm totally in agreement with yeah. you. You can use one CRM for both parts of this business without question. It's, you know, everybody wants more. And of course, I'm no different, right? Like, I would love the tax offer to talk to that CRM just so that they're not double entering. Oh, they're in the middle of the 1040. You know, because what if the wealth advisor wants to pick up a phone, but then they realize, wait a minute, the tax advisor is knee deep working with that client on something. Mm. That's important to know. You don't want to overwhelm the client. But other than that, yeah, I think, listen, we covered it, didn't we? Compliance, mm-hmm. well, philosophy. Marketing, compliance, staff calibration, tech. What are we missing? What are we missing?
I'm missing something.
Business
in my
goals.
Brain. What?
Business goals?
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. Oh, let's talk about that.
Okay, let's talk about that. So that's where the disconnect I find was the greatest. Like, wealth advisors, generally, if they're merging with an accounting firm, they want to grow, mm-hmm. right? And usually an accounting firm, well, there's two reasons. They might want to grow, but they also might want to stop sleeping at their desk during tax season because that's their biggest revenue is in 4 months. And they know if they ease off, they don't make as much. So the wealth business is great because it's continuous, right?
Hmm.
But the goals are different.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Forgot about that one.
Yeah, that's wow. That's crazy, though. Could you, like, in one of my networking groups, we've got an accountant. He's very, very, very successful. He runs one of the largest firms here in town, and they're always looking for more CPAs because they want to grow. But it's so labor intensive. Whereas yeah. I have wealth management firms, and I know you've consulted them too, where they're making $1 million a year, and it's an yeah. advisor with two staff.
Yeah.
And
they're not sleeping at their desk working 8 hours of tax season.
No,
right?
Yeah, they're working yeah. from their boat right in the right, Caribbean right, when their clients right. are super happy.
Right.
I have another question, though, and this is tangential, and I apologize. You know me well enough to know that I get wildly tangential. But there are companies out there who sell programs to financial advisors, and there are companies that sell coaching programs or marketing programs to CPAs to help them market together. Right. And there was a big one in Florida for a really long time. I'm not going to say the name of it because I don't know if they're still in business and I'm not here to pitch them. But one of the big things is they were really pushing financial advisors to aggressively try to partner with CPA firms to help them market. And once they showed their marketing prowess, then they would hopefully potentially merge or increase the amount of referrals. Do you think that's a good step? I mean, how do you date before you get married on this, Jen?
Good question. I mean, I think you work out a referral arrangement between the two separate business entities and do a lot of what I call coffee meetings, mm-hmm. where a couple or one of the executives at the accounting firm and one of the wealth advisors of the wealth firm are meeting consistently every quarter to kind of swap, I call more stories, what's going on, almost like a study group. And the level of trust there will open up the real dialogue to maybe we work better together than separate. But in the meantime, you have this kind of referral system that goes back and forth. I think that's where you start. And between the referral arrangement and slowly trusting each other, I still think my idea of showing that accountant what you do, how you deliver, is still crucial to building trust. So even if you're not merging or blending two entities into one, I still think as an advisor, you need to show that to the accountant, because accountants are all about trust. I'm not saying what wealth advisors aren't, but so you just start by referring.
I love the study group idea. That's, yeah. Oh my gosh.
That's what I used to do. Like when I was an advisor in my 20s, I had two attorneys. I had a general attorney and estate planning attorney. I had two accountants because I didn't know which one was going to make the cut, or I was going to make the cut, right? So I had like this group, and it was kind of like co-discussion, mentoring, or whatnot. And that's how we started. I mean, got to do the dance, kiss a lot of frogs, and hopefully there's enough around your corner, you know.
Oh my God, there's so many frogs, Jen. But the best thing is, I mean, there are a lot of frogs, but some of those frogs do turn into princes. I mean, they really do. You just have to be willing to put that time in and that work in. Whether you're a young advisor or you're a seasoned advisor who are looking for a great comprehensive exit plan with somebody, by the way, who's very willing to pay you premium to be your succession plan. Now is the big thing that happened up in Saginaw, Michigan, is we're going to pay this advisor way more than FP Transition or Succession Resource Group was even quoting, just because they knew how much money they were going to be able to bring in from billable hours. So, okay. So here's the $1 million question for you, Jen Goldman. If somebody listening to this podcast says, oh my God, I totally want to do this, should they give you a call?
You mean they're just starting thinking about merging?
I will leave that wide open, because I mean, this is your opportunity to say, no, yeah. This is where you bring me in, because you're an expert. So for all of our listeners, if you don't know who Jen Goldman is, you need to follow her on social media. She's always putting out great stuff. Super thought leader, unbelievably intelligent person. We happen to love her a lot. The referrals that she's provided for us have all been just like the most stellar referrals. We try to do the same thing for her. But I want to make sure that we're setting you up for success. One, to thank you for being on our podcast again, because we love having you. But I don't want to have a bunch of people call you who aren't the right fit. So let's talk about that fit.
Yeah. So I think the first step is not me, although thank you. Mm-hmm. I think thank you for giving me a moment to think about that question. I think the first step is to do a little frog kissing. I think to try to work out a referral arrangement. Listen, any wealth advisor already has a compliance person, most likely they can talk to about how to arrange that with an accounting firm. I think that's where you start, and vice versa for the accounting firm to the wealth advisor. I think where I'm best fit is when you're almost at the signing of the contract point, but you kind of want to flush out all these details, like peeling back the onion. We just talked about the different pieces. You're ready at that point, or you are, quote, in bed together, and now you're ready to roll out a good plan and then begin executing, bringing it all into one kind of brand.
Fantastic. Okay, well, that makes a lot more sense. And I think our listeners now have a much clearer understanding. And hopefully what this is going to do is they're going to be excited about getting to the point of being able to hire you, because this is going to get them off the couch, right? This is going to motivate them to start going out and joining study groups and meeting with CPAs and showing them what they do. I love that you said that. There are so many advisors who think that that's like so proprietary.
Mm-hmm.
I used to make a lot of my clients as their consultant take me through their financial planning process. Mm-hmm. And it was unbelievable how different all of them were. And then at the same time, how the output was very similar. And I used to yell at them for that, saying, you're just, you know, producing the same crap everybody else is. But
exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, I loved experiencing that because there were always points in the financial planning process or their investment management process where you would see that advisor just light up. Like, you know, that's their passion. They're super excited. And a CPA sees professionally you light up, you're going to be in a totally different stratosphere of professional trust, professional respect when they get to see you in action.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, and then it's just a matter of planning and discussing and being open at the exec level. You and I both know that. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't, it's, you, once you get married, then the real work starts and you have to be dedicated to it. And that's, I think that's the biggest, let's do that as a takeaway. The biggest thing about merging the two businesses is that you have to carve out time to run the new business and talk about it. There's going to be hiccups. There's going to be moments where you have an epiphany where there's a disconnect. If you think you're merging and then just going to hit the ground running with business development 100% of your day or servicing clients, that's, I think, where people run into trouble. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't realize that they needed to carve out more time at the executive level to just work on the business. It's, listen, analogy, just like getting married. There's lots of things you figure out after you're married. And you better set aside marriage time to work through that. It's the same in a business.
And with that, Jen, thank you so much for your thought leadership. Thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you. This is great.
Okay, so anybody who's listening to this, if this didn't motivate you to at least begin a conversation with an accounting firm in your area, well, then you're crazy. You shouldn't listen to this podcast anyway. And in fact, you know, you should probably just unsubscribe. No, dear God, please don't unsubscribe. But I really hope this should resonate with you. It's as strong as it is with me. And here's the best part. The super cool thing about you subscribing to the podcast is if you know somebody who is about to do this, who's about to get married, who's already in bed, who's thinking about all of this, forward them the podcast. It's super easy. Just click that share now button below. So for Jen Goldman and for everybody at Top Advisor Marketing, we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. Click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.
This was brought to you by Iris.xyz, a platform helping financial professionals become better in business and life through new media and new voices. Visit them and learn more at Iris.xyz.